Howard number three, Darren, Donick, and Chase on this rainy Monday morning. Don't forget, if you're out and about, if the rain continues, which it's supposed to pretty much all day, just if there's any standing water or anything, just be careful out there on the roads. We head east at this time. Every Monday we go to Knoxville. We check in with Vince Ferrara at Vince Sports on Twitter. Give him a follow. He's with WNML, the sports animal there in Knoxville after the loss down in Tuscaloosa. Vinny, how you doing?
Good, gentlemen. How you doing?
Good. What's been the reaction today?
Well, anger at some and pride in others. I think the fans like the fact that the team played hard. They can see some development now that you can point to now 3 weeks where they've seen some signs of life and some improvement. Things obviously to stay close to the number one team. You want to win the game, but I think there's a lot of fans that still feel like, hey, we can build off of this. And then there's anger at the officiating and at Jared Garantano for that fumble at the 1 yard line that they bring it in after a long drive of 8 minutes. You punch that in, you're within 8 points on the number one team at their place with 7 minutes to go. So
14 point swing.
It's a combination of feelings.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, that was tough. That was an absolute backbreaker. And, of course, Jeremy Pruitt was not happy on the sidelines and Garantano was coming off. What did you make of the whole exchange heading to the sidelines?
The face mask tug, mm-hmm. I didn't have a problem with it, but Pruitt needs to know better. That's to me how I summarize that. It's not a big deal. I don't have a problem with it. It's like, I think it's kind of like a parent turning a kid, turning their shoulder or whatever and saying, look at me when I'm talking to you, son. I think it was to that, like that. I don't think it's a big deal in the actual act, but I think Jeremy Pruitt needs to know better in today's climate, in today's world, that's going to be looked at wrong. It's going to be made a big deal of, and then people are going to have negative things to say about you and your program. So he needs to stay clear from that, even though I don't think the act itself is a big deal at all. Another problem with it is not only is some of the national reaction, but that's also going to be another little thing that your rivals and people in recruiting are going to use against you, and that he is going to have to try to fight off. I'm not saying it's devastating and something he can't overcome, but when this team has plenty of other things they're having to fight off of in their recruiting battles right now to try to bring in the elite players that they need to improve the roster. So now you're adding another little thing out there that he's got to combat. He and his staff have to combat in recruiting. So that's the bottom line of how I look at it.
Look, I understand all the people out there, and I get it, especially the older we get. You look at the new generation, you're like, oh, gosh, they're so soft. I mean, I saw all that stuff, and I get it. I do, because I didn't think it was that big of a deal either. But to your point, on the other hand, I also understand that, and he has to understand that it's 2019, man. We're about to go into 2020, and that's just not whatever we feel, whatever we think, no matter how right we think we are, it's just not how things are done today. It's not how you operate today, and that's just what it is. You can kick and scream all you want. I understand their thoughts. It was a quick little tug. And there are a lot of people like, get over yourself. This society is so soft. And these kids, blah, blah. We all heard it, right? We all saw it and heard it. And I get it. But you also have to know, as a head coach in a big Division I school, you have to understand the climate of today. And like you said, it'll be used against him, fairly or unfairly. That's just what it'll be. Right. I don't know how much, ramifications there will be. I don't know how much it truly hurts them. But you just have to know you can't do that today. That's just what it is.
No, I agree. It's just something you can avoid and still get your point across the same way. And, it's kind of like a little bit with the head injuries, and that might lead into what you'll probably ask me about next. And Maurer, in that, some of the way he has referenced in the past some of the head injuries, like he just got his bell rung, not necessarily Maurer specifically, but, at other times, it comes across as not being sensitive to it, but that doesn't mean that he's not sensitive to it. You know what I'm saying? So it's not a guarantee that he isn't. I mean, you saw a shot of him talking to Brian Maurer when he came out of the 10 in that Alabama game, and basically he was telling them, "You're done, son." So it's not – that's just one of those things where you're learning on your job. It's not that he's not sensitive to it. It's you don't want to give people the window to interpret that you aren't. So, yeah. You know, it's just one of those things is, you know, at some point, we'll see if that changes, or maybe he's not worried about it. But, you know, winning can flush that. Losing, it surfaces.
It compounds it. Yeah, no doubt. Good point. What do you think he was obviously upset over the result, right? We know, it's like we just described. It was a 14-point swing. It's a critical, critical play in the game. But there seemed to be a little bit extra layer to it. Do you think Garantano changed the play? I mean, what do you think? It seemed like there was a little extra oomph to his anger.
Yeah, I'm glad you asked me that, because it absolutely, I think he changed the play. And we have heard that Garantano has unsuccessfully changed plays at times this year to plays that didn't work out or were the wrong plays. Then Brian Griese, during the broadcast, when I went back and watched it, he mentioned early when Garantano had come into the game that, you know, look, he's a good kid, blah, 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 but at times he has changed plays to the wrong ones, and they haven't worked out. And then later in the game, in that situation, you saw it again. The blocking scheme tells you exactly what the play was supposed to be, and it wasn't blocked like it was a quarterback sneak. They ran a quarterback sneak earlier in the game, and it was blocked much differently when Maurer got in. And then you see the player's reaction, like, what just happened? So I do think that even if Garantano didn't audible to tell everyone else what the play was going to be, I think he might have just done it himself, thinking, hey, I'm going to punch this in, and we're going to get to within 8 points. And I think that's why Pruitt responded the way he did. When Pruitt was asked about the play again for clarification today during his press conference, he said, look, we all know what happened, right? He didn't come out and say he ran his own play, but that, to me, tells me he ran his own play. And unfortunately, it was the wrong play. And I think it was hero ball from Jarrett. And if they punch that in, he can, and they end up close, or who knows when in the game, if you just run the right play and they get that in, he could have still been the hero without necessarily having to match Maurer in touchdown runs and quarterback sneaks. I don't know what he was thinking in that situation, but it was the wrong decision. It didn't work out. And that's, I think, why there was that kind of a reaction, because he did his own thing when they had driven 8 minutes, 14 plays, 66 yards in 8 minutes to get in position to get within a score on the road of the number one team in the country, and then you go and do your own thing. That was just very difficult for everybody to swallow, and that's one of the biggest things that's drawn reactions today.
What do you think is the fallout from all this? Or is there one?
Well, it's that I don't know that he's going to play.
That's what I'm getting at. Is this the beginning of the end?
Well, it could be. Now, Pruitt today, even though he didn't completely take Garantano off the hook in terms of his mistakes, but he did defend him. He said he believes in him. He said they have a relationship, and he's going to coach him hard, like he coaches all the players hard. But, you know, he complimented some of his throws in the pocket, and he said he believes he has what it takes. He just needs to be more consistent so he can play at a higher level. Maybe that's just him taking the high road and not totally throwing the kid under the bus. But JT Shrout played after that, and he basically said, when he was asked about Maurer status and if it's not Maurer this Saturday in South Carolina, would it be Garantano or Shrout? And he basically said, you know, we'll see how the week goes. That, to me, when it's clearly been Garantano before, tells me that it could very well be JT Shrout. We'll see. I think a part of it is going to depend on how ready Shrout is. If he's not ready and he can potentially make more mistakes in their eyes as Garantano, then they may have to ride the wave with Garantano. But I think there's a good chance you could see them still go another route it's not just the practices, it's the games. So that's why I have a hard time making a decision off of practice, because Garantano practices well. It's those in-game decisions that crush him. And so I don't know that you can fully judge off of practice for Garantano. You have to judge and make a judgment off of Shrout, and it could very well be the redshirt freshman if Maurer can't go, which I would be surprised if he does with now concussions in two consecutive weeks.
All right, more with Vince Ferrara on the other side, the Sports Animal in Knoxville, WNML, at Vince Sports on Twitter. More discussion with him next on ESPN 102.5 The Game.
Talking to Vince Ferrara, WNML over in Knoxville. We'll get back to the Titans at the bottom of the hour. Mike Vrabel will have his press conference. We'll monitor that, and we will play that for you before the show is over. Vince, let's talk about South Carolina for a moment, the opponent coming up. Very interesting team to follow. All of the issues they had early in the season, then they get the huge win over Georgia, and then last week they're right in the game. They have the lead against Florida. They're playing at home where they seem to be a much better team. They had a controversial call go against them late in the game where Will Muschamp just went nuts on the sideline. He's a hothead to begin with, and he probably had every right to be upset. Sort of an offensive pick play that allows Florida to walk into the end zone and sort of put the game away. But how do you think the matchup is going? Because South Carolina has urgency for this game. They cannot afford to overlook Tennessee in any way, because for them to stay on schedule and stay on par with their expectations, this is a massive game for them.
No doubt. I think they're a very good team that has a extremely difficult schedule, one of the toughest schedules in the country. In the preseason, looking at the top three ranked teams in the country on their schedule, so I wanted to believe in them in terms of record more during the before the season than I allowed myself to, just because of the difficulty, the grind of that schedule, that it would take a toll on them. And they've actually played very well without Jake Bentley. Overall, with Ryan Helinski, and then even that Georgia game, he went down. They still overcame that. And he had some critical mistakes in that game, but then he made some plays also. The key for them is that they are really good on the defensive line. Pruitt even today admitted that they might have the best defensive line that they've seen all year, and that would include Alabama. And so I think that's what gives them a chance, is they're better on defense. They have big, physical, really good corners. They now have, with Rico Dowdle and Tavian Feaster, the Clemson transfer, they can run the football, and as Pruitt referenced it today, described him as stubborn running the football, and that helps them not make as many mistakes on offense, even though that still happens some. South Carolina also has something in common with Tennessee in that, their fans today are still stewing over the officiating. Because that was the one call that you referenced, Willie, but there was others. I mean, there was PIs, there was holds down the field on the big Piron run. So there is just a lot of things in that game that South Carolina feels like they got the short end of the stick on. And just like Tennessee, there's a bunch of other plays in that game with Alabama that fans are talking about.
Did you see Lane Kiffin's tweet?
Well, how's that SEC officiating tweet Twitter handle that we were all talking about at SEC Media Days? How are they doing?
Absolutely. I hadn't
Max
seen
Harris
them.
Max is not happy with it.
Yeah. There was only one play that I saw a reaction from them. There might be more. I hadn't fully looked, but I really didn't get the description of what they were talking about. Like, they saw a hand on a Tennessee receiver in the end zone, and they were like, well, you can't tell which arm that is wrapped around the receiver. Well, it's not his own. Whose is it? So I really didn't understand the one of the defenses to a potential PI call on Alabama. So, I don't know that that's really done any good. But, Willie, as you kind of, I think inferred, we really didn't – expect that to make any sort of difference in the public eye anyway.
Vince, you were alluding to it of just how important this game against South Carolina will be for Tennessee. But if you look at the rest of the schedule, I think the way they've played lately, you can say that they definitely have a chance in all five of those games, especially after what I saw Missouri do against Vanderbilt, that if right. they catch that Missouri team, Tennessee could have a chance, which if they win, just get four wins, I mean, they're bowl eligible. So that changes the whole season. So how much of an emphasis has Jeremy Pruitt put on of just trying to get some momentum going and take that game to game?
Well, I think what's encouraging for Tennessee fans is that they took them playing Georgia well in the first half, and it looks like they built off of it to get a win over Mississippi State. And then they took what they did against Mississippi State, and they were able to compete on the road, you know, at a really good Alabama team. Now, there's obviously factors that played into that. Tua getting hurt, and I know Tennessee fans counter, well, Brian Maurer got hurt too. And then also, I think Tennessee was very successful in shortening the game and then tackling the open field and not give up those big run-after-catch plays that Alabama just devastates you on. So they shortened the game, and they were able to limit those big plays. And Alabama was working on their running game, too. So I think that played into it. But nonetheless, you can still build. They built off of it, and they were better than I think a lot of people thought in that game. So now we've seen a little bit of a trend developing, and they're getting better at the line of scrimmage in each and every game. You can point to that. And they're probably very well connected, I would say. So I think that's why you can feel like, hey, Tennessee can beat anybody remaining on their schedule. I would not have given them much of a chance at Missouri going into this past weekend, Chase, like you mentioned, because of what Missouri did and because of the way Tennessee looked better and played against Alabama. So all those games are on the table. The caveat is what's the quarterback situation like for Tennessee?
Right.
With Brian Maurer, then, yeah, I might pick Tennessee to win more games than lose. Without Brian Maurer, not having seen JT Stroud for any extended time, who knows? Maybe he'll have similar results to Maurer, or maybe he'll make mistakes like Garantano has at times. But if it's Garantano, if it's not Maurer, I think it's going to be difficult for them. And so that's what kind of throws in the wild card. And if Maurer doesn't play, then when does he play? So that's kind of the wild card, and then where some of the frustration is with Tennessee fans is that we finally got something going. We finally found a quarterback. Now we don't know if he's going to be able to play or not, and that's very unfortunate. Maurer has made a big difference with this team, just the way he plays free and confident, gunslinger. He makes mistakes. That still happens. But, man, he gives them more of a chance than honestly, we saw from Garantano before, even though Garantano's got a lot more experience.
So what I know this may not be the best week to gauge what Alabama is with Tua getting hurt and you know missing some of the game, but what were your impressions of Alabama?
Well, I thought going into this past weekend that LSU was going to beat them when they played later this year. And I didn't see anything to change my mind after this weekend. So I just think Alabama is going to have a difficult time with LSU in their passing game. And Alabama just does not have enough difference makers at the line of scrimmage, I think, to make Joe Burrow uncomfortable enough to take them out of that pass game at the line of scrimmage. So I think Alabama, and here's another problem for Alabama, is they're still one of the best teams in the country. I believe that. But I think because the Ohio States, the Oklahomas, and the Clemsons, because they don't have enough challenges on their schedule, they can or will beat them. And because there's, I think, a really good chance that all those teams stay undefeated, I think the SEC champ gets in with those other three undefeateds. And then the loser of that game, if it's a good close game, LSU and Alabama, we could all think that, man, that's still one of the best four teams in the country, and they still might not get into the playoff because those other three conference champs, flawed or not, I think, and because of the brands, because of who they are, and because they'll blow a lot of teams out, I still think those others would get in that type of scenario. We'll see. It could change, but that's the way I look at it now.
Vince, appreciate it as always.
All right, guys.
You have a great week.
All right, you do the same. Always good to talk to you guys.
All right, Vince Ferrara, WNML, there in Knoxville, at Vince Sports on Twitter. Willie, why don't you give us a word about Lee Company?
All right, glad to give you a word about Lee Company. Give them a call at 567-1000 and ask about this. I know the weather has gotten to a point where there have been some nights where you probably kicked on the heat. I know we did a few times. If you haven't had it checked or you notice it hasn't been running efficiently, call that number for Lee Company, 567-1000. Have them come out and check the heat, and then ask them about the home maintenance plan, because then you get the four annual checkups. They'll be calling you. They'll keep you on top of things. They'll give you those annual checkups, and you get them for free with your monthly fee, which is a very small fee, $8-$9 a month. In exchange for that, you get the free yearly checkups on your heating, your cooling, your plumbing system, and your electrical system. And if there's anything that needs fixing, you will get discounts on those repairs. It's a great system. It's worked for us in our house, and we recommend it to you as well. It's Lee Company, 567-1000. They're a big sponsor of the Nashville Predators. You'll see their display all around Bridgestone Arena tomorrow if you're going to the Predators and the Ducks game. 567-1000 for Lee Company, or go online at leecompany.com.
Don't forget to listen. Your chance to win a pair of tickets to see Nashville SC at First Tennessee Park for the first round of the USL playoffs this Saturday night. Tickets are now available for purchase at NashvilleSC.com. They've been in the league for 2 years, and they've been in the playoffs for 2 years. So good job by Gary Smith and crew as they get geared up for their first round of their playoffs, USL playoffs, this Saturday night. So we will have tickets to give away at some point. Be listening today. In just a moment, we will head over to St. Thomas Sports Park whenever the head coach, Mike Vrabel, gets to the podium to discuss yesterday's 23-20 victory over the Chargers. They up their record to now 3-4. Jacksonville's 3-4. Indy's 4-2, and the Texans are 4-3 in division play. And it was certainly a wild and wacky game, as we've discussed most of today. But nonetheless, most of the times when these games play out like that, the Titans have been on the short end of the stick. That was not the case yesterday. They actually found a way, a big play, as we went through with Teron Davenport earlier, Jeffrey Simmons blowing up his guy, which created a lane for Wesley Woodyard and Rashawn Evans to do their thing, and then Jarrell Casey to recover it. And next thing you know, the Titans ran off the field with a victory.
I'm curious about the tone of this press conference we're going to hear. It should be a lot more optimistic. I am also curious, though, because you tend to move on from the sticky things when you win, especially from the question askers. But I still do wonder. I'm very curious about the system, the chain of command, the decision-making process with when to challenge, when not to challenge, when to go for it, when not to go for it. It's been a constant theme. As we said, I think the 4th-and-1 decision to go for it is a very 50-50. There's a great argument for either side. I don't really mind the decision at all. I am very puzzled as to why you wouldn't challenge on the spot, as we've discussed, backwards and forwards.
Because and you've already gambled at that point. That's what I was saying earlier.
But also, I just would love to know more, and I don't know if they would be willing to share it or not, but the communication. Who is in Mike Vrabel's ear saying, I don't have a good look. I've looked at it backwards and forwards. This one you had time. So let's see what he says.
All right, let's head over there. Let's hear from the head coach, Mike Vrabel.
It's only for confidence right now. Well, I mean, I think that's always a huge part of what you do. I mean, you try to practice, and, you know, we did a lot of good things yesterday, and you hope to build on it and then fix the things that we didn't do well and keep moving. That's what this league's about. And you know, again, we talk about what momentum's created throughout the week, and hopefully you can, you know, carry over a lot of those positive things and then continue to finish and clean up those things later in the week going into the game. Make some positive plays on all three phases and then, you know, make adjustments throughout the game.
How frustrating are the penalties? I mean, this is a team, you know, this wasn't an issue pretty much last year. 7, is that a number that needs to improve, or are you okay with ones that were called yesterday?
I mean, I think we'd obviously like to play a game penalty-free, knowing that's not going to happen. You know, I'm trying to think through, you know, defensive holding, you know, PI with a big receiver, and it's kind of a pushing, shoving match. You know, two guys 6 yards from the play don't see it as PI. A guy 30 yards away sees it as PI, calls it PI. But, you know, those aren't – some of those we can control, some of them we can't. Still have to understand and play with the fundamentals. When you get your hands outside and you're – that's going to be a penalty. You know, got to coach Janu up better. He's got to execute better and get his hands inside. I'm just trying to think about the penalties here since you asked me.
When you watched the final play that resulted in the strip and the recovery, what did you see, I guess, from penetration up front and just across the board on that play?
Saw great effort. Great effort by 11 guys that were determined to make a play. Saw a player playing his first NFL game, you know, knock a guy back 2 yards, create penetration. Saw Wood get his hand on the ball and us able to finish it.
What kind of explanation did they give you when you were discussing the play clock scenario after the fake punt where it seemed like they didn't know what was going on?
Well, I think we have to be careful there. We have to assume that we're going to convert, right? And that's the thing. And so in the excitement of gaining, you know, a huge play, great execution by the players, that we're really ready to go. That's really what it comes down to. It comes down to, you know, we've got 11 guys 60 yards from our line of scrimmage, our sideline, that are excited. And they got to get off the field, and we got to get the offense on the field to run a play. No different than we're trying to celebrate touchdowns, which is something that I think is important, that we go celebrate them. I mean, hell, we haven't had that many. And so knowing that we're going to have to kick an extra point, that we also find a way to get back there and make sure that we're ready to go for the extra point. That's really what that comes down to.
Byard's a guy who's thrown a pass and the punt team now caught one. Is he unusual in the way you're able to use him in those situations?
I think that you'd like to try to form a team with as many athletes that you possibly can. You know, we evaluate players. There's guys that have linear speed, power, that may not be fluid athletes, but they're great football players. I've coached them. I think we can identify them. And there's also guys that are athletes that if you kind of put them in space or you put them on a basketball court, they can kind of move around. And find open spaces. They can catch. They don't, they're not real nervous when the ball comes to them. They got soft hands, whatever it may be. They're probably good at a bunch of sports. Because when you get out there and you start playing, I think that's the versatility where, you know, guys can come down and they can tackle, they can blitz, they can, you know, their movements on a football field. And I think KB would fall into that category of an athletic player.
Similar to that last play when you mentioned Jeffrey Simmons, did you see some evidence of him being able to impact, you know, more than just the guy he was going up against? Was he able to impact players around him as well?
Yeah, I mean, I think guys are, you know, you're always excited to play with guys that, you know, give you a chance to win, that can, you know, that can dominate, that are, you know, good at their position, and, you know, happy for Jeff, happy for the entire team. But that was cool for him to play in his first game and be able to contribute the way he did and see some of the stuff that we had worked on while he was coming back from his rehab. And, again, it was a big decision for Jeff. I think that it's cool for me to be able to sit there on Saturday morning and have him come in and say, you know, Coach, I'm ready. You know, I'm confident. And being able to go and play in the game, because it was up to him. You know what I mean? It's like, Jeff, you just have to tell me you're cleared medically. You have to tell us that you have the confidence to go out there and play. And when you tell us that, that's what we're going to do. I'm not going to sit here and say, hey, we're 2-4. You know, you're playing. Would never do that. Would never do that. Would never want anybody to do that to my son. And he came in, and it was a cool thing. He was emotional to be able to recognize that dream and playing in the National Football League.
Did you have a ballpark idea of snaps for him, or did you just kind of play out the way?
I think that we wanted to try to keep it right where it was. Would like to continue to look to increase that based on how he feels, you know, and the more that the players can handle, the more that we'll try to give them.
As you go through the season with your ups and downs, it looks like Derrick Henry has been very consistent for you in what he's delivering each and every week. Is that something you know you're going to get and you bank on each week now because he's hit that level of consistency?
He has. He's running hard. I mean, we talked about one of the keys, a huge key to the game offensively, was our ability to break some tackles and make people miss. You know, he did that for us. He ran hard, tossed it to him on the touchdown, and made the post safety miss. Guy we can't block. So he's running hard and certainly giving us a chance.
Were you fortunate that you got a good angle on the fumble at the end? And if they would not have had a definitive angle, what would have happened? I mean, why did the clock stop? And would they have potentially had a chance?
There's a lot of questions. You know, a lot of questions coming down a stretch there. Yeah. And again, going back to the decision, and I know you guys are all big on decisions, right, Eric?
Yeah.
Do you let them score? You have some timeouts. I go back to the Saints, 6 seconds left, one timeout, and how critical that one timeout was for them to be able to throw the football and kick a field goal. So you're always thinking about, hey, do I, trying to have these timeouts. Then when they run it or they get the penalty, and then that kind of throws that off, and it's a 10-second runoff, and I'm like, okay. But then when they start to decide to run it, I'm like, well, maybe we just keep stopping them. They haven't run the ball very well, and we're doing okay. Let's take the 10-second runoff, start the clock, and see if they could potentially pile on these timeouts. Then when they run it or they get the penalty, and then that kind of throws that off, and it's a 10-second runoff, and I'm like, okay. But then when they start to decide to run it, I'm like, well, maybe we just keep stopping them. They haven't run the ball very well, and we're doing okay. Let's take the 10-second runoff, start the clock, and see if they could potentially, get in a pile and not be able to spike it and kick a field goal or whatever they're going to do, kind of keep the pressure on them at that point in time. So you asked me about the last play. We see the ball out, see Jarrell with the ball. I think they roll him down, but I think they stop the clock. My guess is because they buzz down from upstairs in a matter of 2 or 3 seconds. I don't know, because that's really the only thing that would stop it at that point in time would be that they buzzed it from upstairs. I saw them stop it at 7 seconds. They tell me they're looking at the play. I ask them what the scenarios would be. How much time would they have if they gave them the ball back? They said that there would be 5 seconds after the 10-second runoff. They would walk in, walk away, start it, and at that point in time, the Chargers would have a decision to make whether they're going to hand it off, throw it in the end zone, or clock it on third down, if that helps.
Did you ever consider letting them score?
I'd say that was one of the decisions that was one of the choices. Then the false start, the penalty back again, and then when they were running it, when I decided that, I thought we could stop them if they were going to try to run it in there.
You think the defenders would have rioted it if you'd have told them to let them score?
I think that's something that, as a player, there's 160 plays. There's 160 decisions, okay? And we try to go with the one that we think is going to help us win the game. The players executed just like they did when we called a fake punt. The players executed it. We weren't able to execute on 4th and 2 inches. Those are decisions that, to me, that was the easiest decision of the season, was to go for it.
You have analytics on that?
On the fake punt?
No, on the
fourth. I liked how they lined up. I liked how Kevin caught it all week in practice. Which one?
On the fourth down.
The sneak.
Yeah, that was – I wouldn't need analytics. Neither should you. Needed 2 inches. Phillip Rivers would have had more than ample time. That wasn't.
Even if Kern pins.
That was not it. Go ahead, Eric.
What went into the challenge earlier in the game, and does that?
You know, you kind of get. You know, you fall into this trap of how many of these guys are going to drag their feet on the sidelines, on the same sidelines. And again, I'm actually kicking myself because I knew that Keenan Allen got his foot down. It's like watching Hopkins for 4 or 5 years in Houston. And you're like, there's no way he got his foot down. These guys are great players, and they get their foot down. You know, as far as challenging the spot, I talk to Al as much as Al can really stand talking to me. Because I need to know what exactly he's thinking and Russell York in New York when they go through a challenge process. Because it's not how we see it. It's not how I see it. It's how they see it. And I'll tell you that if they can't see the football on the spots, they're next to impossible to get. And so the spot challenges that we've seen, the few that have been reversed, just like with Dalvin Cook a few weeks ago, he was kind of in the open field. There was one tackler on him. He reaches the ball, and then his knee goes down. You can clearly see the ball. You can clearly see the knee. When you have 20 people in there on a sneak and you can't see the football, that's when Al tells you, if I can't see the football, I can't overturn whatever they call it on the field. So that's just what our process is, the communication, as we look to challenge plays. Just like we've had conversations about the OPI and DPI, and everybody's like, why isn't he challenging them? Right? Like, how's that worked out? They're not picking them up. And you guys, everybody thought about 4 weeks ago that they were going to pick them up. They're not.
So even if Kern punts them down inside the 10 there, though, you still think that's...
I think that the guy across the field, right, if you look back at really that drive... Four plays, what I felt like was our worst defensive series of the year. We're going to pick up that first down. We are. We're going to execute it better. We're going to coach it better. And that's just really what we're going to do. And that was the decision. It was Phillip Rivers with a lot of time to come down there and tie the game or score a touchdown. And that's why I made the decision.
I feel like you spent a lot of time talking about Corey Davis owning the football.
Yeah.
Was this game as good as he and AJ have been?
There were some really cool shots of watching on film of these guys going and tacking the football. The quarterback throwing it, into tight coverage. You know, there's tight match coverage. And I felt like really Corey took that to heart of going and attacking the football. And we're going to need that. You know, those guys, Corey and AJ – I mean, they're big players. They got strong hands, but they're not like blocks. They got great hands, and they're strong hands. They're physical, and they can catch those contested passes. And, I thought Hump worked. I thought Furt gave us a little spark. I thought Janu, the way Janu caught the football yesterday, the first play of the game, the back shoulder, he's attacking the football, not catching it behind his body, catching it out in front of his eyes. Those are all the things that we've practiced, talked about, showed him. We showed them if you look back to the Rams and the Seattle game, the reason that interception occurred at the end of the game was there was a player for the Rams that tried to catch a slant like this behind his eyes, hits his hands, and the safety catches it. And so when we show them that the next day, we say, why do we want to catch the ball out in front of our eyes? We don't want to let it cross our vision. This is why. And there was a lot of great examples of those guys going and attacking the football yesterday, catching it with their hands, not letting it get into their body. That was really cool to see.
We got a lot of guys involved in the passing game. What did Ryan give you yesterday that maybe you didn't have the first 6 weeks?
Well, I'll just touch on what Ryan did yesterday. We're not going to go back and revisit, the first 6 weeks. That doesn't help us, going forward, or wasn't going to help us yesterday. But, I think he was decisive. It wasn't perfect, but, he trusted him. He moved it around. He tried, let the play develop. He saw some guys, first read, second read. I thought go back to Dennis Kelly and Jameel stepping in there and doing a great job. The line protected.
thought we mixed up, what we were calling.
Do you think Ryan, either because of arm strength or maybe even personality, is more willing to take a chance to throw into the tight windows?
I think that Ryan, took advantage of the opportunity. He was excited to be able to lead an offensive football team and a football team yesterday. Again, you looked at the timing of Corey's touchdown. It was decisive. It was in a tight window, and there was a lot of those, John. Really cool to see Tajay. That's when you run a guy along the back line, he's not the primary read. That you're going to get to that guy. For whatever reason, they dropped 9 guys out of there. Ryan stayed in a pocket and then was able to see Tajay and throw it over, a couple set of hands. So that was happy for Tajay.
It's been a good tackle in the football with A.J. Brown, and the way he catches the ball across the middle against the Yak. Is that something that his acceleration through the catch, is that something that stands out to you?
Well, I think that to be able to run through the catch and not stop or jump, sometimes guys, leave their feet to catch a ball that they don't have to jump for. But he's strong. I mean, he's a powerful runner with the ball in his hands. And that was a key to the game, was being able to catch it and either run with it, but be able to break some tackles and make some plays after we got the ball in our hand.
It's been quite a few years where in the league where most teams, if they had to go to their backup, have been doomed at quarterback. This year, there's been a lot of success around the league. You've seen 2 of them in Brissett, who wasn't going to be a starter, and Minshew. And now you've gotten success with your own backup. Well, you think something's changed in the league to allow for that?
I just think that there's probably an understanding through the organizations of how critical that position is. And really kind of how fine of a line maybe some of those players are. We're glad that Ryan's here, or we're happy that he played a heck of a game yesterday. I'm not really sure looks like Jacoby's settling in pretty well. Threw 4 touchdown passes yesterday. Nick Foles has done it before he went to Jacksonville. Tom Brady did it a long time ago in New England. It's about taking advantage of your opportunities in this league, however they come, through however they put you up there. When you get in there, taking advantage of it, whether that be Dennis Kelly yesterday, LaShawn Sims, who went in there and covered Allen on a double move when the quarterback was going to him the entire time. Sims was all over it, huge play. Kicker going in there, making a kick, wasn't on our team a couple weeks ago. That's what this league's about. It's going in there and taking advantage of the opportunity.
Wood yard on that list too for
Wood. He just is so that's kind of what he's been, and last week and this week, and I don't really point him out because we look at him as a third starter. He's been in there a bunch, and we're just thankful for his leadership, his production, his toughness, and what he brings to it.
Him being available for you.
Yeah, I think so. I think that I think one thing Ryan's working on is probably his routine, and when he kicks, having never kicked, but I would imagine it's a lot like a pitcher. When you throw, it's not like you come back, you have a routine until you come back and kick again. I mean, that's a lot of stress on a leg, and how it's the leg speed and impact at a ball and all that other stuff. So they have a routine. These guys have a very specific routine about how they come back after they kick. And so one thing we asked Ryan to do yesterday was to go through a kicking workout, just like he would in a game. We're trying to get him, back, and he can do all those things on his own as part of his rehab. And so check in here with him today. See how that's coming as far as how he feels today, and then we'll reevaluate him and when he decides to kick again.
There you go. We want you to hear some of Mike Vrabel's press conference live today after the 23-20 victory over the Chargers. That'll close the book on the third hour, but we will come back and kick off the final hour with a discussion on what you just heard. That's next on Darren Donick and Chase, ESPN 102.5 The Game.